Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour, and today I'm really excited to get into part two of our discussion with Paul Clitheroe. In part one of this series, we discussed with Paul the importance of creating financial surplus, so having a look at your current situation, how much you're earning, and how much you're spending. In part two, Paul's going to talk us through all of the importance of doing something with that surplus once you've created it, where to find the assets that are going to be of most value to you, and how to ensure that you earn that financial freedom that you're looking for.
Okay, back to the point. So the point is, what we're talking to people is that this guidance is just your apple falling on your head gravity stuff. It's just Newton's law of, in this case, it's Paul's law of money. It is so damn simple. So we work out where we are very simply in terms of what we've got coming in. It's a bit harder. Over a month or two, we will know what's going out. If we have a negative account, in other words, we're spending more than we earn, we fix it.
Yep.
Tough love. If we've got a surplus coming in, which most listeners have, then we get into, do we buy property? Do we buy shares? Do we add gearing? Do we go private equity? And there are all those conversations to be had. But all of those pathways, yes, you'll get somewhat different outcomes, particularly if you're involving gearing. And I think if you're starting to involve gearing, then maybe a conversation with a professional is not a bad idea, actually.
This is true, yeah.
Because the thing I worry about gearing is if I see someone who's gearing into property, a well-located property, gearing into well-chosen local and international shares, and they say to me, Paul, if the markets go down 50%, which they probably will, you know, three times a century.
Yeah.
You know, we'll wake up and see markets down 50, 60%.
Yes.
Providing we look at that and say, that's fine, I'm not selling.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes.
But what I'm fretful about gearing is, so in a sense, I'm not fretful about the upside.
Yeah.
Because, you know, over the next 20, 30 years, will share prices go up and will property prices go up in growing communities, growing economies? Yes, they will.
Yes.
So if we're gearing for that period of time, not fast, but guess what we tend to do? We need to fight our natural fear and greed. When do we buy most shares? On the way up. When do we buy most property? Towards the peak of the boom.
Yes.
When do we want to sell our shares and sell our property as the market falls?
Yeah.
And what I fret about shares, property has got this magnificent safety net.
Yeah.
Whenever the market falls big time, and it will at some point in the cycle, we can't sell.
Yeah. Or we choose not to. Many people just hang on to it.
But more importantly, we can't.
Don't have a choice.
No, it becomes illiquid. You know, my property fell 30-odd percent in 1990 when rates. And the simple truth is, Vicky and myself could not have sold it if we tried.
Right.
So we're protected from our own stupidity.
Well, look,
it's true. We come to shares, people creating wealth through shares. We only need to go back 10 years now to the GFC. And as you know, let's pick on the poor old Commonwealth Bank. Given your NAB, we won't pick on you.
Yeah, different one.
No. Same thing happened to you, by the way.
Yeah, I remember well.
The Combank, as we went to the GFC, was about $65.
Yeah.
And this is only 10 years ago. And Combank got down to about $23.40.
Yeah. $16.
Yeah, well, care to guess which day over the last 20-odd years where Australians sold the most bank shares? At $23.40 and $16.
Yeah, wow.
So basically, and why are we selling? And people are ringing me on radio saying, I've got to sell my bank shares. Well, why did you buy them? Long-term investment? Yeah, hang on. Why are we no longer long-term investors?
We're not long-term investors anymore.
We're not anymore.
Changed my mind.
And I'd say, when you sell your Combank shares, what are you doing with the money? Oh, they said, look, we're selling Combank shares. We feel the Commonwealth Bank and all the banks are going to collapse. And there was plenty of conversation about that.
We
forget these really easily.
Yeah.
We forget really quickly. And I'd say, what are you going to
do
with
the money? It's amusing in retrospect, but it wasn't funny at the time.
Well, what was funny is they were telling me they were selling their Commonwealth Bank shares and they were going to put the money in the Commonwealth Bank.
So
you're selling your shares because the bank's going to go broke and you're putting your money in the bank. Oh, that'll be okay though.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons the Australian government put the $1 million guarantee on deposits. And I mean, at that point in time, I think when Combank shares, and NAB would have been the same, when Combank shares got down to that $23-odd, I think they were paying a fully franked dividend of about 13%.
With
a government guarantee on $1 million, and even today that guarantee is $250,000.
Yeah.
So my fear is that all this wonderful logic stuff is, I say to people, you're generating surpluses, buy a geared property if you're younger, buy geared shares if you're younger. That's cool with me. At my age, 62, look, I do think life cycle's important. I don't think gearing is particularly good for a 62-year-old like me. Because as I get to this stage in my career, I don't mind if markets go down 50%. Because hopefully, I'm hoping to be around for a while. And my wife's feeding me broccoli. Things are looking good. But we're both hoping to be around for a while. And so therefore, we've got time. It doesn't fuss me. But what I can't afford to do is if markets fall 50%, I panic and sell.
Yeah.
There's my permanent capital loss.
Yes.
And that impacts on my lifestyle.
Yep.
So really what we're doing here is terribly simple. What have we got? What are we earning? What assets do we have today? What surplus have we got? How are we going to direct our surplus? And then if you want to know all that means, is look, just go onto one of the terrific free sites. MLC will do this. NAB will do this. Commonwealth Bank will do it. Certainly on the government's the Money Smart website, which we run out of ASIC. That's part of one of the things that I'm involved in with my government hat on. Go on to any of these sites. I do like the Money Smart website, and I've got nothing against. I want strong banks. I'm a shareholder in banks, and I am thrilled that our banks didn't fall over during the GFC.
I think we're all thrilled about that. Actually,
look, seriously. And so basically, go to a site, and if you want to know what your $1,000 a month is going to do to you, just go to one of those models and put in. Here is my position. If you like, you can use the Money Smart website to do your budget if you like.
Yeah.
But I don't want people doing a budget too quickly because it's going to be crap. Well, we don't have the information to input. You know, I do this with my wife. We still do a budget each year. You know, Vicky says, I go, okay, so darling, your hair, makeup, clothing, and she goes, not talking about that, how much you spend on your sailing boat.
So
we sort of, there's always
conversation.
There's a bit of that going on, which is good and fun. But the issue there is we then really are simply saying to people is that you can go online without an advisor and you can say, if I've got 9.5% going into super as part of my boss's contribution, I'm paying an extra $20 a week on my mortgage, I've got $1,000 a month surplus which I'm putting into shares or whatever the heck you're doing, and I don't much care what you're doing.
Yeah.
If it's a bad idea, I care.
Yeah.
But if it's any normal idea, so if Fred Smith's turned up and said, I've got an investment that's going to make you 50% per annum.
Yeah,
obviously we run for our lives.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. You're going to get ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
So assuming we're avoiding rip-offs and we're buying sensible stuff, then we can plug into our model, and our little model, we're our own advisor here, and our model is going to say, Paul, and Vic and myself are doing this for 35 years, and our little model says, you will be financially independent, and in our case, we were targeting about 55. But what is financial independence?
Yeah.
So you've got to write yours down. And in our case, I do want to keep sailing. You know, we do want to keep traveling. And so it's ridiculous for me to talk about my cost of living, because my cost of living is my choice.
Yeah.
Vicky's dad, my father-in-law, who sadly passed away last year, but he was one of these classic guys, single pensioner living down at Kiama.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe the single pension was so much because he could save, comfortably was saving $70, $80 a week out of it.
Yeah, wow.
And we'd say to him, how do you do that? And he and his pensioner mates would make homebrew, then cut a deal with a Chinese restaurant where they'd go there on a Tuesday with their own homebrew and pay no corkage. They'd buy one large fried rice at $4.50 each, drink their homebrew.
Yeah.
And that was their big
night out for the week. Fantastic.
Big day. And then they'd go fishing down at Kiama Beach and have a fish barbecue.
Beautiful.
So honestly, he could not believe a single age pension. He owned a house, which makes a difference.
It makes a big difference.
He had ample money because I wouldn't have had ample money. There's no sailing there.
No.
maybe a smaller sailing boat than mine. But so all of these points. So the final step in this pudding we're building here is the final step in the pudding is that we say, why are we doing this? Why would we bother saving money? Spending is more fun. We're saving it not because we're going to retire. Stupid word. We're saving it because we're going to be financially independent.
Yeah.
So I've been financially independent for 7 or 8 years now. I do probably a few days a week work because it gives me pleasure.
Yeah.
Social connections, and I think I'm making a bit of a contribution. So it's pretty simple stuff, okay? So for me to say retire is a damn silly thing, and I encourage people not to say. Have a plan, controlling your money, using your surplus to invest how you want to invest. Property, well-located property's fine. In the perfect world, of course, we'd have people owning and paying off a property. Of course, they might own an investment property. Obviously, I'd like them to have a decent swag of international shares. You know, simply because we're so small and the rest of the world's so big.
Yeah,
let's not get overly, complicated.
We don't have to get fancy about it.
We really don't.
Yeah.
And, as we all know, you can go and do that for a few basis points with an index manager or an ETF, or you can talk to an advisor, do what you like. But I think if you go into whether you're doing this yourself, But if you go to an advisor and say to the advisor, right, here's what I earn, here's what I spend, here's my surplus, here's my target for financial independence. Mm. I've got a $300,000 gap over the next 20 years.
Yeah.
I think I'm getting there by doing this and this, but I'm not sure if I should be adding a bit of gearing, or in actual fact, should I really be topping up my super because it's more tax effective? And I think there an advisor's going to breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
And say, thank heavens for this. You know, I don't need to spend 10 hours with you, because there's nothing worse than a couple coming to an advisor and you say, what are your retirement dreams? Or in my case, financial independence dreams. And he says, oh, look, I'd really like to live in France for a year.
Mm.
And the look on the wife's face when she says,
we've never discussed that before.
And then you get a violent brawl breaking out during the meeting. Do it at home, will you?
Please have that conversation before you come
please,
to
please.
Us.
Please, please. Yeah, we're advisors, not psychics. But you hear this all the time. I mean, I honestly say to people saying, look, I'd really like a career as a financial planner. And they say, what should I do? And I say, the perfect degree would be economics psychology.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Economics psychology. I think you need the numeracy. But I think psychology would be a really valuable part of any financial advisor's
perhaps
training.
Perhaps a basic counselling course as well.
Counselling. Clients fighting in your office.
Yeah.
So here we have, I think we've completed our pudding. And it's, you know, in my opinion, this is a very, very, and we are making a pudding, but it's an exciting pudding. It's our life.
Yeah.
So the whether you're 18 or what age you are, I'm 62 and so on. So in a sense, I've achieved my financial independence numbers, but now I've got to make sure that I do keep my spending to that number.
Mm.
Because if I overspend now or markets go down, I panic and sell, I could actually throw myself back into not being financially independent.
Yeah.
So I've got a whole, so obviously I'm fully diversified and people go, how does Paul Clitheroe invest? Look, 35 years ago, someone said, you know, Paul, a third in property, a third in shares, and a third in fixed interest wouldn't be that bad.
Mm.
And I hate to tell you how close I am to that.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Very
it's really
advice.
Embarrassing.
Mm.
It's a really simple pudding.
Mm.
So our goal at the end, what are we making a pudding about? We're saying we want all Australians to be financially independent.
Mm-hmm.
18, 25, 30. Yeah. And the younger you are, the easier this is.
Yeah.
The challenges are you've got to work out what you're spending today and you've got to be honest about it.
Yes.
And it's a bit of a pain. I hate it. But you've got to do
no
it.
No one enjoys
it's
it.
It's going to be
but
awful.
But it's important.
You've got to do it. And also then there's no point doing this unless we know why we're doing it. So you've got to be able to say to me, Paul, I want to, at age 60, I want to be in a position to spend, what's a decent financial independence? Look, let's go for a bigger number, okay? I want $100,000 a year.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go for a big number.
Mm.
Now we're going to do a bit of business class travel.
Yeah, do some very fancy things.
We're going to go some really, let's be ambitious.
Mm.
And the reason I've chosen this number is it makes my math easy.
How
big's my pudding got to be? Well, it's simple, multiply it by 17.
Yeah.
You know the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So roundabout.
Yeah.
You know, you want $100,000 a year, multiply it by 17, you're going to need $1.7 million.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to go, well, I've done all my numbers, I'm never going to get that.
Yeah.
And that's valuable. You go, well, you know, really, that really is a really large number. We know that most people would see probably $55,000 to $60,000.
Yes.
And then of course, then where maybe an advisor is helpful is a certain point in your cycle is probably going to come, whereas I'm happy where people get to 60-ish and start to spend some of the money they've created.
Mm.
And so then you need to say, oh, that's interesting. At 67, some pension probably starts cutting in.
Yeah.
Because I've reduced some of my assets.
Yes.
And that bit of pension, as you know, better than I probably, it really does extend the longevity of your money.
Yeah,
now, here we're getting a bit more complicated. So all I want is, please know what you're earning today. Have your little list of your assets, your debts and liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Please understand what you're really spending today. Don't do a budget until you've done that, because you'll do your budget and you'll fail.
Yeah.
So don't do that. Mm-hmm. Work out where it's going first, then be honest about it. Then you do your budget. If you've got negatives, in other words, you're spending more than you're earning, just fix it.
Mm.
That's your problem, not mine. You've got to fix it, okay? If you've got surpluses, then I would suggest you go online and do a bit of a model, including your 9.5% going into super and your house growing in value, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You're aiming to buy a house, whatever it may be. It's your goals.
Mm.
And then just see what you're looking like at the end of as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
Aim for financial independence and put a price on it. And, and that price might be like my Leo, my recently deceased father, and that price might be a single age pension is all I need, plus a house.
Yes.
That might be it for you.
Mm.
Or you might be like me and you say, well, I hope to keep racing an ocean racing boat for a fair while, and so therefore my budget's bigger.
Give me something simple.
Just it's you, not me.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we've done a plan.
It's fantastic.
We have a plan. But critically, we have goals.
Mm.
And if we don't have these goals, and I'm into short, medium-term goals, like having a holiday, paying off your car, saving to buy a house. I love short-term goals and medium-term goals. But at the end of the day, and these things keep building. So now Vicky and myself are now having this debate about with three sort of 23 to 30-year-old kids.
Mm.
You know, we're now having a debate about the fact that all the evidence is that statistically one of us may live to 90.
Mm.
So what sense does it make to us to maybe, let's say that does happen, if one of us lives to 90, which is statistically quite likely, then we drop dead and we leave money to 70-year-old children.
Yeah.
Now, so that's an all-new conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's quite
And so the world's changed so much that not only do we need more money because of our life expectancy, but we also need to think about how that relates to our kids and what are we teaching them about money and so what values are you leaving with your children? That's a bit of a different planning thing, but you know, I kind of think a lot of that's inside the family as well. I think it's part of your pudding.
Yeah, one of the conversations you need to have as part of this process.
So for me, where does the advisor come into all this? Every single person, in my opinion, whether they're seeking advice or not, does this first.
Yes.
Then if you are going to an advisor, you're actually not having one of these nearly stupid conversations. And the we advisors have this, you had this, we had all the time, where the person comes in and hasn't got a clue.
Yeah.
So you end up sending them off
to do the work
with
again.
This list.
Yeah.
So let's just do it.
Yeah.
And then you may say to yourself, you know, with all the online advice available at the moment, you know, people like InvestSmart, NabTrade, all this stuff out there, MoneySmart website, you may well decide, like probably a large percentage of Australians, you know, I can do a lot of this myself and will probably use advisors the way I do.
Yeah.
And I tend to use advisors, financial advisors, the way that I'd use a lawyer and accountant.
Yeah.
And that is I tend to pick and choose.
Yeah.
When I've got a particular issue, for example, you know, Vicky and myself getting into our 60s and the issues around a transition to retirement pension and so on, I'm a so-called financial advisor. I am not competent to deal with that issue for myself.
Right.
So we went off and paid someone, you know, quite a high hourly fee.
Yeah.
We say, look, this is our problem.
To deal with
this
specific
issue. We don't
want
to talk about, you know, we've done the goal setting. Mm. We understand the size of our pudding. Mm. We know how much we're spending. No, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
We have a specific problem.
Yeah.
We're both just getting into our 60s. We've got all this new legislation. Look, I could spend a week and read it, but seriously, I could, you know, it's, for me, it's like going to a specialist doctor.
Yeah.
So I don't care how much you know. I think advice around estate planning, for example.
Yeah.
I can't be a lawyer, an accountant, a super specialist. I'm not. So I seek advice. But when I seek advice, I use it really efficiently because I know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say, okay, well, how much is in your super fund? I can say, here it is. Here's what's gone in. Here's the dates
that
went in. Here's the pre. Here's the post. You know, blah, blah, blah. I'm not paying this person money to do the bog basics that I should understand.
To find all your things for you.
That I think is the end of the sermon.
Thank you so much. That has been incredibly powerful, I think, as a framework for people. So we, via NabTrade and via MoneySmart and so via so many different ways, we let people know all of the exciting things that are available to them. But one thing we tend not to give people is a framework to work within. So that framework is incredibly powerful. We'll have some paperwork on our website for people to find so they can go and actually work through this themselves. I think that's really useful. Thank you so much for listening to part two of our series with Paul Clitheroe, How to Create Your Own Financial Plan. I'm Gemma Dale, and I'd love to thank you again for listening and tuning into Your Wealth. You can catch us every week on iTunes, on the NabTrade website, or on podbean.com. We've received some fantastic feedback from you, our listeners, and we love to get your questions and anything you'd love us to talk about in the future. So if you'd like to email us, you can catch us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. Look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.